Welcome to NTD Evening News. Our top story tonight, House Speaker Mike Johnson speaks at Columbia University. He's calling for the university's president to resign. This as anti-Israel protests spread to other campuses across the U.S. Iris Tao is in Manhattan. The $95 billion foreign aid package and TikTok bill are now in motion. What President Biden is saying about it as the Secretary of State comments on the China threat. Jack Bradley at the White House. In a turn of events, a grand jury now indicts over 100 illegal immigrants who allegedly stormed the Texas border. Why did a judge try to dismiss the case just a day earlier? We hear from a former ICE officer. California lawmakers want to make it easier for Arizonians to access abortion. That says Arizona's House votes to repeal the state's near-total abortion ban. Jason Blair reports. And looking ahead, the Supreme Court is poised to confront a new legal question tomorrow, whether a former president has immunity from criminal prosecution for his actions while in office. Arlene Richards explains what's at stake.
This is NTD Evening News. Live from our NTD global headquarters in New York City, here is Tiffany Meyer.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. House Speaker Mike Johnson in New York City today, meeting with students as he calls for Columbia University's president to resign. NTD's White House correspondent Iris Tao was at the speaker's press conference.
After meeting with Columbia University's president Manoush Shafiq here on campus, House Speaker Mike Johnson says she needs to step down as she's too weak in protecting Jewish students.
The feeling is that they have not acted to restore order on the campus. This is dangerous. This is not free expression. This is not First Amendment. They are threatening, intimidating, saying that they will take violence upon Jewish students. We met with Jewish students who are in fear. They can't come on campus.
We can't hear you.
Meanwhile, Johnson was repeatedly booed by pro-Palestinian protesters during his press conference, though he responded with a blunt message.
It does not matter who shouts in our faces. We're going to do what is right by America. My message to the students inside the encampment is go back to class and stop the nonsense. Stop wasting your parents' money.
Johnson says he also plans to call President Biden, tell him what he's seen here, and also demand him take executive action to address this. President Biden on Monday said he condemns anti-Semitic protests, but also condemns those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. Former President Trump says Biden does not know who he's backing. All this is as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday called the situation on American college campuses horrific.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful.
Netanyahu acknowledged that some federal officials here in the U.S. have come out to condemn these protests, but says more needs to be done. Reporting from Columbia University, Iris Tao, NTD News.
President Biden has signed the $95 billion foreign aid package that provides funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. It also forces TikTok to divest from its Chinese parent company or face a ban in U.S. app stores. NTD's Jack Bradley has more from the White House.
President Biden signed the package here this morning at the White House, promising immediately to send $1 billion in weapons to Ukraine. Now, Ukraine will be receiving the majority of this package, about $61 billion, while Israel will be receiving $26 billion, and Taiwan will get about $8 billion. Here's President Biden this morning.
And it's an investment in our own security. Because when our allies are stronger, and I want to make this point again and again, when our allies are stronger, we are stronger.
The package includes a separate measure that would force TikTok to divest from its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, or be banned on U.S. app stores. TikTok has about a year to do so, and that's because of data privacy concerns, as the Chinese regime can access TikTok's user data for any user that uses TikTok in the world. At the same time, Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, is in China, and among many of the topics he'll be discussing with officials there are human rights. The State Department released a human rights report documenting the atrocities and crimes against humanity still being committed by the Chinese regime today in China, including those against Uyghurs and Falun Gong, Falun Gong is a spiritual practice based on the principles of truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. Here's Vedant Patel, the deputy principal spokesperson at the State Department.
On the secretary's visit to China, he said he would address human rights, but on this report that came out on Monday, will he specifically address the persecution of religious groups like the Uyghurs and Falun Gong? And what have talks been like on this in the past?
So what I can say is that in every engagement that we have had with the People's Republic of China since the onset of this administration, human rights have always been on the agenda, and they will continue to be so. And I have no doubt that human rights will be discussed this week while the secretary is there.
This is on the anniversary of 1999's April 25th incident, in which 10,000 Falun Gong practitioners went to Beijing to peacefully appeal the unlawful arrest of Falun Gong practitioners in China. And this incident has been used by the Chinese regime to further escalate the persecution against Falun Gong, which still continues in China today. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Jack Bradley, NTD News.
A grand jury now indicting more than 100 illegal immigrants for allegedly storming the Texas border. Meanwhile, a government watchdog finds that the Biden administration used border wall funds for environmental planning instead.
A Texas grand jury on Tuesday indicted more than 140 illegal immigrants on misdemeanor rioting charges. That's for an alleged mass attempt to breach the U.S.-Mexico border earlier this month. This comes just a day after a county judge threw the case out, saying there was no probable cause for the arrests. Speaking on NTD News Today, retired ICE and Homeland Security Officer Victor Avila says he doesn't understand why the county judge dismissed the case, arguing officers always present at least some probable cause.
It never happened to me in my career when I arrested someone on probable cause and then presented them before a judge, and then the judge decided that there wasn't any. It goes to the bigger picture here that there's politics involved. For some reason, if you're illegal in this country, you seem to get additional protections.
District Attorney Bill Hicks explained how he managed to secure the indictments. He told the El Paso Times that we presented the case as a whole. We presented videotape evidence of what happened. The grand jurors believed there was, in fact, probable cause. And in other immigration-related news, the Government Accountability Office issued a new report. It found that the Biden administration spent funds allocated to the border wall, partly to conduct standard environmental planning instead. This is despite Congress approving the funds for Homeland Security to build a border barrier between 2018 and 2021. Republicans on the House Budget Committee commented on the new report, saying DHS continues to play political games that stall contractors and prevent barriers from being built, effectively finding a way to dodge the law. The report by the Accountability Office found that the Biden administration did not break the law by diverting the funds. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
The Supreme Court today hearing arguments in the Biden administration's challenge to Idaho's abortion ban. The state argues that the Justice Department is misinterpreting a federal law in order to create a nationwide abortion mandate in hospital emergency rooms.
The Biden administration sued Idaho in an attempt to undermine our rights and our state's choice to preserve life. The Biden administration is lawlessly manipulating the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act to overwrite the will of the people of Idaho.
The justices appear to be deeply divided over the enforcement of Idaho's abortion law. Their decision could determine whether doctors can perform abortions on pregnant women during emergencies in states that have banned abortion. Idaho is one of 14 states that restrict abortion at all stages of pregnancy, although it does have an exception to save the mother's life. Meanwhile, outside the courthouse, a crowd of protesters gathered behind a barricade to rally for and against abortion. The Justice Department maintains that federal law requires hospitals to offer an abortion in an emergency when it's considered a, quote, necessary stabilizing treatment. DOJ attorneys believe that applies even in states that have abortion bans. The High Court is expected to hand down its ruling by the end of June. California lawmakers have introduced a bill that would make it easier for women in Arizona to travel to the Golden State to get an abortion. That says Arizona's House voted today to repeal the state's near-total abortion ban. NTD's Jason Blair reports.
Lawmakers said SB 233, or the urgency bill, grants Arizona doctors the ability to perform abortions on Arizona women in California.
So to the Arizona people of childbearing age and those who love and support them, we have your back.
A goal to dominate and control women's bodies, lives, and futures.
The bill was authored by Senator Nancy Skinner. It's a response to an Arizona Supreme Court ruling on April 9th that revived an 1864 law making abortion illegal except when the mother's life is in danger.
It's obvious that the real objective is to return women to second-class status.
We're trying to get ahead of this law, which goes into effect on June 8th.
On Wednesday, the Arizona House approved a repeal of the revived 1864 law and sent the measure to be heard by the state Senate. If approved, the 1864 law would be overturned and the state's 15-week abortion restriction would remain in place. Jason Blair, NTD News.
An important day for the Supreme Court tomorrow, where the justices are going to hear arguments on a claim by former President Trump that he has legal immunity for his actions while in office. The court's decision could affect both the D.C. and Georgia election cases. Our legal correspondent Arlene Richards breaks it down.
On Thursday, the Supreme Court is set to consider whether a former president can be criminally prosecuted for his actions while in office. The nine justices will face the second case this term with a question they have never confronted before. The outcome could determine whether former President Trump faces a federal trial this year on four felony counts, including conspiracy to defraud the U.S. and obstruction of an official proceeding. The historic case filed by Special Counsel Jack Smith alleges Trump attempted to overturn the 2020 presidential election results. He argues that although Trump was still president in 2020, his alleged actions to interfere with the election were not official. Trump has pleaded not guilty. He claims that as a former president, he is immune from criminal prosecution because he was acting in his official capacity during the 2020 election. A ruling in Trump's favor would bring the prosecution to an end and could affect the Georgia RICO case, which asserts similar claims against Trump. But a ruling in Smith's favor would take Trump's ability to claim immunity off the table and allow for Trump to be charged as a regular defendant. A Smith victory would also raise the stakes of the 2024 election for Trump, because if he retakes the White House, Trump could order the Justice Department to drop the case. Smith has been pushing hard for the case to go forward before the November election, but the trial has been placed on hold indefinitely. The justices must ultimately decide whether the doctrine of presidential immunity applies to criminal prosecution. There's no timeline as to when the Supreme Court justices could rule on the question. Arlene Richards, NTD News.
Coming up, anti-Israeli protests spreading to more colleges across the U.S. A survivor of the Chinese Cultural Revolution shares with us the parallels she's seeing. Conservative leaders are gathering in Budapest. What are the parallels between the top issues in the U.S. and Europe? And can the conservative movement agree on Ukraine? Luis Martinez takes us there. And the government is making it easier for air travelers to get refunds if their flights are delayed or canceled. Details on that after the break. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel protests have been spreading to more college campuses across the nation. Earlier, we spoke with Lily Tang Williams, a survivor of the Chinese Cultural Revolution and congressional candidate in New Hampshire, to discuss the protests' parallels with other social movements. Lily Tang Williams, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me back.
Now, we're seeing protests across America's elite colleges where they're in support of Palestine, in support of the Hamas terror group, and also calling for the death of America. Now, you survived the Cultural Revolution in China. What similarities are you seeing here?
Well, it is terrifying, actually, to see the similarities. It's a massive movement weaponized our youth against the traditional American values and culture. It's not just happening now. It has been happening for a while. And I have been calling this American Red Guards were weaponized. Even during 2020, a few months of rioting, looting, and burning. And so we started with like a CRT or BLM, Antifa, and now it's a trans activist to from river to the sea and pro Hamas groups. It's just so worrisome that our kids, even sometimes you ask them, they don't know why they're protesting, but they want to join this movement. The most scary part is that when you look at the Communist Party of the United States and the Socialist Party and the Communist Revolutionary of America, all those accounts on X are promoting and urging people to join the protest. Like, what do they have in common there? So you see this kind of united together groups, all from the Marxist side, and they're trying to take down America. It's very, very worrisome.
And now expand on that for us. How do these concepts of, say, the oppressors versus the oppressed tie back into that Marxist ideology?
Well, it's identity politics. Mao used the same a class theory and to divide people between, five red categories, which is under oppressed, and five black categories is under oppressor. So if you see the identity politics playing out in our country, and that's what the Marxist left are doing, is constantly creating new oppressors and versus oppressed. And I have been advocating that that's the communist tactic. I have seen before, we need to be united as American citizens, even though when we disagree on policies, but we should actually treat each other with respect and have open discussions and debate, but not resort this kind of identity politics. And the politicians and next and media are promoting this kind of identity politics.
And Lily, given your background, your escape from China to America, if these socialist Marxist movements take over America, where is there left to go?
Well, we really have no place to go. Immigrants like me who fled those totalitarian countries come here, live under freedom. We embrace American ideals of freedom, free market, free enterprise, meritocracy, and rule of law. All those American ideals are under attack. And by this, youth who even don't know what they're fighting for, but they have been indoctrinated and they think they're right and they're with the right movement. And so, like Lenny said, you got to, indoctrinate the youth and give me a child for 8 years and that child will be Bolshevik, communist forever. So they are the product of American education. I hope parents will wake up, and I hope people, including professors, will wake up, because if they know Mao's Cultural Revolution, all the actually professors who supported the communism and all the Red Guard kids who supported the Mao, they all were equally enslaved and threw under the bus. So I don't want that happening to this country.
Lily Tang Williams, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
The Conservative Political Action Conference Hungary will kick off tomorrow. Over the next 3 days, political figures, heads of state and activists will gather to discuss the future of the conservative movement. NTD correspondent Luis Martinez is in Budapest with more.
During the next 3 days, over 3,000 conservatives will gather here in Budapest for the third year in a row to celebrate the Conservative Political Action Conference in Hungary. Over 80 speakers, among them seven prime ministers and three members of the Israeli war cabinet of Benjamin Netanyahu, will speak with foreign delegations to share common grounds and common challenges that conservatives face worldwide.
You know, there are, in some of the details, there are differences. But I do think when you're looking at the major policies, for example, on gender ideology, on immigration, which is securing the border for national security purposes, you know, on economic prosperity, those you can find common ground.
European conservatives have their eyes set on the June elections. From June 6th through June 9th, the European Union will hold parliamentary elections that will determine the next composition of the EU Parliament. But the Ukraine war is also center stage. I spoke with Matt Schlapp, the chairman of the American Conservative Union, and this is what he had to say about the Ukraine war.
The biggest problem we have with aid towards Ukraine, there's a division amongst conservatives whether this is wise or not wise, but I really don't think there's a division amongst people that are aware of what America has done in the past when they've got involved in conflicts. What's the plan?
I also had the opportunity to speak with Mikola Shanto, the Director General of the Center for Fundamental Rights in Budapest, who's actually hosting CPAC Hungary this year, and he believes European conservatives will not support further arming Ukraine, as we saw the U.S. Congress approve last week. Instead, European conservatives, according to Mikola Shanto, would support a path to end the conflict in Ukraine. Reporting from Budapest, Hungary, Luis Eduardo Martinez, NTD News.
Has the world forgotten October 7th, Israel's 9/11? Kelly Wright traveled to Israel to speak to survivors and hostages' family members. They vow never to forget as they combat anti-Semitism and fight for freedom. Watch Hope for Israel at NTD News Primetime Special on Friday, April 26th at 10 p.m. Eastern here on NTD. Boeing badly hurt but still breathing. Its massive losses were lower than analysts' expectations. NTD's Virginia Gibson has the details on Boeing's latest earnings.
Boeing reported lower than expected losses as it deals with reputational damage. Widespread claims of a broken safety culture culminating in a door blowing off a plane mid-flight earlier this year. Its commercial airplane division lost $1.14 billion, nearly doubling the loss in the same quarter last year, but less of a loss than expected. CEO Dave Calhoun began Boeing's earnings call by immediately addressing the crisis.
I will direct my comments toward the dramatic actions we've taken since the Alaska Airlines accident. We held quality stand downs across all of our production lines in BCA and sought the advice and counsel of more than 70,000 employees to improve our factory disciplines and adherence to our quality standards. All in all, we collected over 30,000 ideas.
Calhoun says, though he's stepping down by the end of the year, he is committed to making sure everyone is 100% confident in Boeing. New safety protocols and inspection standards are affecting production, but he expects things to ramp back up.
While this effort will slow our recovery timing, we are now seeing these proof points that give us confidence that we'll begin to stabilize and improve performance moving forward.
This comes amid accusations that Boeing retaliated against workers who insisted on higher safety standards. The workers wanted to reevaluate the engineering work on 777 and 787 aircraft. They alleged Boeing pushed back and gave them negative performance reviews. In an official statement, Boeing says it has zero tolerance for retaliation and found none after investigating this incident. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
New federal rules say air travelers deserve cash refunds, not just vouchers or travel credits, when flights are delayed or canceled. Passengers will receive automatic cash refunds if a domestic flight is delayed by more than 3 hours. The same applies to international flights that are more than 6 hours behind schedule. But that's not all. When you first look up fare and schedule information online, you'll soon see service fees right alongside the full fare. And you'll get a refund on baggage fees if your bags aren't delivered within 12 hours of domestic flight arrivals or 15 to 30 hours of international flight arrivals. The rules were nearly 3 years in the works. The department said consumers are expected to save over $540 million annually in excess airline fees. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said, quote, airlines should compete with one another to secure passengers' business, not to see who can charge the most in surprise fees. Coming up, the Supreme Court hears arguments on emergency abortions. A legal expert joins us to explain the key takeaways. Stay tuned for more after the break here on NTD News. Welcome back. If you're just joining us now, here are some of today's top headlines. President Biden signed into law the $95 billion foreign aid package that provides funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. It also forces TikTok to divest from its Chinese parent company or face a ban in U.S. app stores. House Speaker Mike Johnson visited Columbia University as anti-Israel protests continues on campus. Johnson met with Jewish students, condemned anti-Semitism on campus, and called on the Columbia president to resign. The Supreme Court heard arguments in the Biden administration's challenge to Idaho's abortion ban. The justices have to decide whether doctors can perform abortions on pregnant women during emergencies in states that have banned abortions. California lawmakers introduced a bill that would grant Arizona doctors the ability to perform abortions on Arizona women in California. The bill is a response to Arizona's recent ban on nearly all abortions. And the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments tomorrow on whether former President Trump enjoys presidential immunity from criminal prosecution. The court's decision could affect both the D.C. and Georgia election cases. Joining me now to explore Idaho's abortion case and Trump's immunity case is Jim Berling. He's the vice president of legal affairs at the Pacific Legal Foundation. He has successfully argued major cases before the Supreme Court and helped Pacific Legal get its 18th Supreme Court win just this month. Jim, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good to see you again. Now, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments today on emergency abortions. What were the main takeaways from today? And as an attorney, what's standing out to you about this case?
Well, first of all, I think that the conservative liberal split was front and center in this case. The liberals were very much side of the federal government's ability to use an old statute that was signed by President Reagan, of all people, to argue that if somebody comes into a hospital in emergency conditions, they have a right to have an abortion. And I think the liberals thought that was a fine idea, but the conservatives had a great deal of trouble with that. They said that, look, the Emergency Medical Treatment Act talks about the health of the mother, whereas Idaho says you can only have an abortion if the life of the mother is at stake. And so there's a split there, and I think the conservatives are saying, now, wait a minute, this old bill that President Reagan signed isn't so broad to override state rules on abortion. I mean, indeed, the statute talks about the unborn child. Those are the very words of the statute a number of times. And some of the conservative justices are saying, well, how can you have a statute that talks about the health of an unborn child and the health of the mother and say that you have to have an abortion whenever the health of the mother is at issue? So I think the conservatives are going to have a lot of trouble with what the Biden administration is attempting right now.
Now, the Supreme Court will also be hearing oral arguments on Trump's presidential immunity claim tomorrow. Now, Trump will be absent as he'll be in court in Manhattan for the hush money criminal trial. But Trump did summarize his attorney's arguments in a series of posts on Truth Social. What are you anticipating in terms of the arguments tomorrow?
I think it's going to be a very long argument, and I think the justices are going to have a lot of questions. Trump's lawyers are going to focus on the policy implications. They've called it before a mortal threat to the president's independence. The Trump's lawyer are going to argue that the judiciary, the court branch of the government, cannot interfere with the executive branch by having criminal prosecutions of a sitting president or of a former president. Trump's lawyers are going to say from the early days of the Republic, the courts have taken a hands-off position from telling the president what to do with injunctions or civil immunities in the Nixon case. Trump's lawyers are going to claim that all official acts are immune from criminal prosecution, and no distinction whether or not there was the acts were motivated by a desire to stay in office, which is what the lower court said. On the other hand, the United States and Jack Smith are going to be arguing quite the opposite. They're going to focus on distinguishing those old cases and saying none of the old cases talked about criminal prosecution of a president. None of those cases talked about that, said that a president was somehow above the law under a separation of powers, that the judiciary, the judicial branch, have always had the ability of bringing a criminal prosecution against anybody. If there is an issue there, that's where the pardon power comes in, and one president can pardon another. But I think the arguments are going to be focusing on those issues.
Given all that you did just lay out, how do you anticipate the justices will evaluate this case and its legal arguments?
I think the court and all the justices are going to push back on some of the more aggressive claims of immunity, that the president is immune from all circumstances, all cases. I think the court is going to be skeptical of the argument that because Trump was acquitted in two impeachment trials, that he is immune, therefore, from any criminal prosecutions. I think the court is going to make short, they're simply going to reject that, the conservatives and liberals alike. And I think the court's going to have lots of questions about the policy of immunity. Does it free the president up from all prosecutions during and after office? Is it limited to official acts as opposed to going out and shooting somebody in Fifth Avenue, which would not be an official act of the presidency? So I think that the court's going to really be pushing very, very hard on the attorneys for Trump, and probably less hard for the attorneys for Jack Smith.
On that note, Trump has emphasized that if he doesn't have presidential immunity, then President Biden doesn't either, and claimed Biden would, quote, certainly be prosecuted for his many actual crimes. Now, Jim, what would be the implications of the Supreme Court's ruling here? How could it impact not only Trump, but other former and future presidents?
I think this could have a tremendous impact. If you look what happens in some other parts of the world, every time a third world president is out of office, the new guy goes and prosecutes the old one criminally. And I think that's a really be a sad and unfortunate precedent to have in the United States. But then again, we don't have necessarily a president who has behaved quite like the former President Trump. So, but I think, yes, if President Trump is found not to be immune, I think future presidents are going to be in much greater jeopardy of being subject to criminal prosecution for crimes great and small.
And in your view, how likely is the Supreme Court to uphold the D.C. Circuit Court's February ruling that Trump is not immune in the 2020 election interference case? Which way could the court go?
I think the court is likely to find that there is no immunity under these particular circumstances, certainly not under the impeachment clause process. But I think the court is also ultimately going to find to a way of threading the needle carefully to make sure that all immunity is not, you know, ruled out, but immunity in these circumstances is not something that the court's going to uphold.
Jim Berling, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Pacific Legal Foundation, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Former Congressman George Santos ended his bid for New York's 1st Congressional District yesterday. Santos, who was running as an independent, said he did not want to take votes away from the Republican incumbent, Nick LaLota. The House expelled Santos last year. He's facing nearly two dozen federal charges, accusing him of fraud and other crimes. Santos announced last month his plans to run for a different seat than the one he had held on Long Island, but he changed course yesterday. Santos said while he has policy differences with LaLota, he does not want to potentially hand the seat over to Democrats. The GOP currently holds a razor-thin majority in the House. All eyes are on Pennsylvania, where another round of presidential primaries concluded yesterday. Along with that, primary races for the Senate and the House. NTD's Jeremy Sandberg has the results.
Voters headed to the polls across Pennsylvania on Tuesday to cast their ballots in the 2024 primary election. Unofficial election results this morning, according to the state of Pennsylvania, show President Biden with more than 93% of the vote. Former President Trump got over 83%. Former Ambassador Nikki Haley, who dropped out of the race in March, received over 16% of the Republican vote, suggesting some Republicans are looking for an alternative to Trump. Likewise, Muslim American voters mounted an abandoned Biden campaign to protest the president's handling of the Israel-Hamas war. The organization Uncommitted PA said it was aiming for 40,000 uncommitted votes. Pennsylvania did not offer an uncommitted option on its ballot. It's currently unclear how many write-in votes were part of the movement. Biden faced similar efforts in battleground states like Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, and North Carolina. Biden and Trump clinched their party nominations last month, but have both campaigned heavily in Pennsylvania, a swing state crucial in both 2016 and 2020. Pennsylvania is politically divided and has a sizable number of electoral votes.
Okay, I voted for Donald Trump, Donald J. Trump, and I voted for him the last time. Was very, very disappointed because he did an excellent job. And I would vote for him again and again.
I think it's an important election. I think they all are. I think this one in particular, we've got to keep Trump out. I wish we had two different candidates to choose from, but the ones that we have are what we have, and I'm happy to vote for Biden.
Further down the ballot, voters also selected nominees in competitive primaries for Congress, the state legislature, and three statewide offices. There was a particular focus on Pennsylvania's 12th district, where Democratic Congresswoman Summer Lee defeated a primary challenger. Lee has been a fierce critic of Biden's support for Israel. Meanwhile, incumbent Senator Bob Casey, a Democrat, and his Republican challenger Dave McCormick were both unopposed in their primaries. The November race is expected to be close and could help decide if Democrats retain control of the Senate. Jeremy Sandberg, NTD News.
Coming up, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce sues the Federal Trade Commission, saying the FTC is overstepping its authority by banning non-compete agreements in the workforce. An economist gives us his take. And in golf news, the PGA Tour is ready to reward Tiger Woods for his loyalty. But how much is that worth? Dave Martin joins us to discuss when we return. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. The Federal Trade Commission is getting sued by the Chamber of Commerce and several business groups over banning non-compete agreements. Those prevent a person from working in the same industry or starting a competing business for some time after leaving a job. The FTC calls these agreements unfair, but some say the contracts protect trade secrets and encourage competition. NTD's David Lamb spoke with Vance Ginn, president of Ginn Economic Consulting. He's also a former chief economist for the White House Office of Management and Budget.
Vance, great to see you again, and thank you for joining us. Now, tell us, with the FTC banning non-compete agreements, what's the impact on the job market?
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I think that this will have a big impact on the job market. There's a lot of businesses out there where they negotiate these agreements, these work agreements with the worker to not share information or not have the same customers or clients after they leave. That's kind of this non-compete agreements that they sign. And there are many of these across many sectors of the economy, including a lot of those that are new innovations, technology firms, manufacturing firms, those types. And it's really across many sectors of the economy. And so this will have a big influence on the workforce and the future of work. And I really think at the end of the day that this should be overturned.
Now, Vance, under these non-compete agreements, how long did employees typically have to wait after they quit their job before moving to a new company in the same industry?
Well, it depends on the agreement that they sign. Sometimes it could be 6 months, sometimes it could be a year. Other times these non-compete agreements could be more than a year. And so that can put some strain on individuals whenever they go and try to find another job. However, they usually get paid more when they have a non-compete agreement because as they go into these negotiations, you can either get a job that doesn't have a non-compete agreement or you take a job that has one, you're going to want a higher pay or more benefits.
Now, moving forward, if businesses aren't allowed to have these specialized contracts, how would they ensure that their trade secrets won't be revealed to other companies from their former employees?
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think it's one that a lot of these employers are going to look at and say, do we really want to hire as many workers if we're going to have to be concerned about trade secrets, other things being released, or clients and things of that nature being released, because that will reduce their profitability over time. What we want really is a more competitive labor market, not one that is going to be based on what's the next rule put in place by the FTC, by the Biden administration, or even by states. We should be unleashing people to allow for them to negotiate whatever the agreements are going to be. And so I think this is going to hurt not only employment, but wages and fringe benefits for the future. This should really be something that's done with voluntary transactions.
Vance Ginn, president of the Ginn Economic Consulting, thank you so much for your insight on this new rule from the FTC.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Five of the seven cargo ships that have been stuck in Baltimore's harbor will soon be able to get out. The deeper channel opens starting tomorrow. That takes the major shipping hub one step closer to reopening. The port has been closed since the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed last month. The new channel will be 35 feet deep, a substantial increase over the three other temporary channels established in recent weeks. It puts the cleanup effort slightly ahead of schedule. And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, a lot going on today. Let's start in college football, where the Heisman Trophy will be returned to former USC running back Reggie Bush. Why did they do this about face?
Well, in short, because of a change of rules. You know, Bush had to return the trophy in 2010 after the NCAA found that he had received impermissible benefits. It was a big thing at the time. I mean, the Heisman Trophy, that's the most prestigious award in the game, and he won it in 2005. But the school also had to retroactively forfeit some of the games he played in, including the national championship game in 2005 when they blew out Oklahoma. But those impermissible benefits would now be legal in today's NIL era, you know, where NCAA players can be paid for their name, image, and likeness. Now, this had been gaining some momentum in recent months, especially after 2012 Heisman winner Johnny Manziel said on social media that he would no longer participate in Heisman ceremonies until they returned Bush's trophy back to him. So he got his wish.
Well, now over in golf, the PGA is reportedly set to reward players today who have stayed loyal to the tour with equity shares worth millions of dollars. How does this figure into their possible merger with LIV?
Well, it helps them keep their best players anyway. I mean, LIV has been picking off their players during these negotiations even. Every time they do, the PGA loses a little bit more of their product and in turn a little bit more of their bargaining power. And they've done it, LIV has done it, by offering lots of money. Now, according to the report you just mentioned, which was in the Telegraph, PGA Tour Enterprises, which is the name of the new company with some U.S. investors, will hand out approximately $750 million in total of equity to current and even some former players. It'll be based on their success at the events as well as cultural popularity. Now, of course, Tiger Woods is going to be the biggest beneficiary. A reported $100 million equity stake is headed his way. That's a far cry, though, from the $750 million reported offer that he got from LIV, but, you know, $100 million is still $100 million anyway. Now, it's going to be vested over an eight-year period, so the players have to stay with the PGA to get a full amount, but it certainly helps to protect the PGA against LIV picking off more of their players.
Well, shifting gears to the NHL playoffs, we've got three games on tonight, including Edmonton hosting Los Angeles, which is the third straight time these two have met in the first round. What do the Kings need to do to win?
You know, I would say contain Connor McDavid. That's obviously a lot easier said than done. He had five assists in their game one victory. That's the most in a playoff game since like 1998, I think. He's won three MVP awards already, so I don't know how you do it, but if he goes off again, they're in trouble. Now, obviously, like you said, this is the third straight year these two have met in the first round. The Oilers won the previous two already, so they've had trouble containing him. I'm sure they'll switch up their defenses tonight against him, but it's a tall order. Now, we also have two other games tonight, as Boston is at Toronto in a series all tied up at one, and Vegas, who is the defending champions, they are at Dallas, leading 1-0.
Now, moving on to the NBA playoffs, we've got a pair of games tonight, including a game two in Boston between the Celtics and Heat. On paper, this looks like it should be a lopsided series. Are you expecting a sweep?
Well, you know, I definitely agree that on paper this should be a lopsided series. Boston had the best record in the league. Miami, meanwhile, snuck into the playoffs as an 8 seed, plus or without Jimmy Butler, who's a 6-time All-Star. He's their best player. He's really been their catalyst for their two NBA Finals runs over the last 4 years. I don't see them winning this series without him, but it should be noted that the Heat were actually swept 3 years ago by the Bucks, so it's not out of the question. I think there's too much of a rivalry, though, to the Heat to not at least take one of these games. Now, in the other matchup tonight, it's also a 1-versus-8 matchup, the Thunder hosting the Pelicans. New Orleans is kind of in the same position as Miami. They're without their best player, Zion Williamson, who really, when he's healthy, he's one of the best players in the league. Now, Oklahoma City has a young team, so I really don't see them pulling off the sweep in this series, but I think they'll at least win at home tonight.
Well, Dave, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tiff.
And that's all for today's news. For round-the-clock coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Good night.